Hello and welcome to the Camping Crew Podcast with Chris and Aaron.
Hi everybody, welcome to episode 194 of the Camping Crew Podcast. I'm Aaron Birchall.
And I am Chris Byrne.
As always, it's meant to be a fun podcast. We're just enthusiasts and what we discuss on the podcast are our own personal views. Although in saying that, we do look into things that you ask us to look into.
If you'd like to support the podcast and if you can afford to, you can buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/thecampingcrew. We want to thank the two people that sponsored us this month as well. Thank you.
Let's kick off with news. In fact, Darren Hickey and Doreen Diablo were both on to you with the same story.
Yeah, it was a concerning news story that came up there on the Irish Examiner. It was out on the 5th of March. And the headline was Rogue Campervan Owners Dumping Human Waste in an Area of Cork Popular with Swimmers. So the 30, they talked about the area in Cove, but this place was about a few miles down the road called Koskinney. And seemingly people have been spotted dumping their toilet waste into the water, which is absolutely criminal in my mind. And look, I'm 100% sure none of our listeners are doing that. You know, these people are just, I don't know.
Look, we don't know who's doing it, but they're not seasoned campers. You know, seasoned campers care because we're all fighting for the likes of Cove Airs and Clonmel Airs and any kind of air. And this is what puts the nail in the coffin for us getting airs.
Yeah, I was saying that in my conversations and chats with Darren and Doran the Doblo on that. Like, it's really, for me, the only solution to that is to put in temporary or permanent CCTV, catch them in the act, and absolutely prosecute them to the hilt of the law, you know.
I would assume the fact that the paper took it as a story, people must have furnished them at reg numbers. So maybe, yeah, if you report them to the proper authorities. Just look, we know they're not seasoned campers. They're none of our guys because we are all fighting for facilities. So I can't believe that they're seasoned campers.
Yeah, and I don't normally like to do stories like this on the podcast, but I suppose my reason for doing it on this occasion, for adding it in, is to, I suppose, remember to tell as many people as possible that these aren't us.
Yeah.
You know, promote, look, these people aren't campers. You know,
no.
Make sure you tell people. Because people are going to read that story and they're going to say,
we're all painted with the same brush.
You've got to spread the word that this isn't us, you know.
And equally, and we've said this loads of times, when you're staying totally on a tangent, when you're staying in towns and villages, and if you do manage to stay in a car park or down a by road, and you're in the pub buying a bit of lunch, or you're in the local shopping centre buying, let them know that you're staying in Murphy's Air, or, oh, I'm staying in the car park. Let them know you're motorhome owners, and you're spending the few bob in the local centre or Super Value or petrol station, whatever. If you're wild camping, doing a bit of wild camping or overnight, let people know that this is who we are. And then if they say, oh, we saw you dumping the poo, you say, oh, well, look, we're not all like that. But let people know we're spending money in your town.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, if anyone wants to check that out, as I said, that's available in the Irish Examiner. The date is the 5th of March there. Paddy got in touch with us on Instagram. He says, hi, Camping Crew. I was listening to your podcast and you mentioned about important facilities on a campsite. I'm only new to owning a camper, but I would like to share my own personal opinion. What I like is an online booking system. As I'm not great talking on the phone, this suits me. Another thing that I like is a good shower setup. Nice, hot, powerful showers are a big plus. The most important thing for me is nice people. No matter how good a campsite is, if the people running it aren't nice, then it's a big no for me. He says, this is for you, Aaron. He says, I also have a question for Aaron, but maybe it's a Charlie and me question. Would you recommend somebody getting into making YouTube videos? Not necessarily about camping, but in general, is there much time you have to commit in it? And is it expensive to get set up? Thanks, lads. Yeah, we look forward to your podcast.
We answer Charlie and me questions here. If it's not about camping, yeah, I think it's a bloody great thing. Do it. do you know what? It's not necessarily about camping. Is there much time in it? Yes. An 18-minute Charlie and me review is 4 hours between recording and then editing. And again, now, okay, I'm editing them quicker. The same with the podcasts. At first, our 20-minute podcast would have took me 15, 20 minutes to edit, but now we dawdle through it. So yes, there is time in it. I would highly recommend doing it, but don't do it for the money. There's no money in it. Ireland is very, very small. to make a living out of it. And is it expensive to set up? No, because I started off using old Samsung phones. When I'd get an upgrade, that old phone became my camera phone. Now, I have since invested in nice microphones and nice cameras and a good editing software. But no, you can literally do it with a mobile phone.
If you've got a good smartphone with a good camera, you can set it up and do everything, edit it. You can do it all on your phone if you're prepared to put in the work.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not as easy as having professional software. Professional cameras will make it look better. But the smartphones now have amazing cameras in them, front and back. So you can do it. Like, anyone can set up a YouTube channel about anything, and you don't have to put videos out every day. You don't have to put videos out every do it because you want to do it, because you want to share something that you think other people would be interested in. You know, there's videos. I think I heard a stat. I don't even recall it, but the amount of videos on YouTube that it would take a million minutes an hour to watch or something crazy like that.
It's crazy.
But, you know, if you think you have something you can share with people that people would be interested in looking at it, definitely go for it. Just smartphone is all you need. You can post it, you can edit it all on the phone, or you can go big like Aaron does.
I started with you know, when you buy your laptop and Microsoft has a video editing software on it, I look back at my first 10, 15 videos. It's only when I saw that we were starting, I think when we hit 1,000 subscribers, now we were well into our second season, we were a year and a half old. At that point, I kind of went, right, I'm going to buy an editing suite, but I use phones. Paddy, I just use old phones. I do have a Canon. I do have a good drone, but 9 times out of 10, it's mobile phones.
Your videos don't have to be long as well. I watch lots of videos on YouTube that are 2 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And there's another guy I watch, AB Camping, on YouTube, and his videos are generally over 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And I'd often have him on the background during the day, just playing away and watching this guy camping in the rain and just sitting there smoking his cigars and talking about anything and everything. And, I think it's hilarious, you know.
All I'd say to Paddy is, if you see us on site over the season, I always have my gear and my laptop with me, and I would gladly sit down for 20 minutes, half an hour, and show you what we do. But no, it's not expensive. But yes, there's a bit of time in it, and they don't have to be Spielberg. Just very fussy and finicky about mine because we're at it so long. But best of luck, and if we can help you out at all, definitely call over on a campsite, say hi, and we'll do our best to help you and point you in the right direction.
Yeah, and I'm happy to sit behind the camera and just talk.
Yeah, the amount of hassle I have trying to get him on camera for, I'd say in the 3 years that we're doing between this and Charlie and me, if I have 9 minutes of you, I might have 10. I know I've got 35 minutes of bloopers, but I might have 10 minutes of actual Chris on camera.
That's not by accident. Aaron, you have a topic to move on to now, have you?
Yeah, Paul was on to me. I've been quite busy on Instagram lately with people getting in touch. And Paul is a regular Instagrammer and congratulating me on this, that and the other. But he wanted to know about windscreen covers, internal or external. Now, I gave my views. We have discussed this on podcasts. I personally use the external ones. I find them great. Chris also uses the external. But the reason I don't use internal is I've got a dash cam. I've got 3 camera holders and I've got another camera holder, a phone holder. So I've too much on the inside of a windscreen. But I got on to Paul and I gave him the link to the video and I told him my preference is external.
One of the big reasons I would see for using the internal ones, and in my mind, this is one of my big reasons for using internal,
I know what you're going to say, and I said that.
You go wild camping.
Yeah. Quick getaway.
Wild camping, and you need to move during the night.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is get out and have to take off those outer covers because they are trickier. Whereas if you've got them just stuck onto your window, you pop them off and drive away.
Yeah, I did say that to him. I said, this has come up on the podcast. We were moving my camper once in sight, and just to fold down the front windscreen, I remember I needed you and Deirdre to kind of be my right and left side. So yes, for quick getaway, I do find over the years that the internal ones do still give a little bit of condensation at times.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they don't pretend.
I've never had condensation with the external ones. But yes, internal, if you're going to be doing a lot of wild camping, for quick getaway is a definite. He went on to say about dash cams, have you any recommendations? Again, the two that I use, 2 models, and I gave them all the details. I buy mine from Harvey Norman. They seem to be, it's the name has gone out of my head now.
Nextbase are the
Nextbase, that's it.
They would be kind of the industry leaders.
Yeah I use a 922 and a 522, only because they didn't have, I have two 922s And again, they're great for my road footage. So again, I told him Nextbase seemed to be the industry leader.
I have one that I got from AliExpress, actually. It's 7MAI. They've had lots of different versions. I like it. It's simple, straightforward. It's cheap and cheerful, but it works for me. And still 2 years later down the road.
Have you ever downloaded any of the footage off of this?
Pure download. Every now and again, I download it if I wanted to look back on something, but...
Mine, again, it depends on the memory card. Again, I said all this I said it to Paul about the dash cams. When you buy them, we're not sponsored by Harvey Norman, that's where I got mine. You don't get a card, you don't get an SD card. So again, it's a mini card. So what is it? 18/32/64. I stuck a 64, which gives me 5 hours of road footage before it starts recording over itself. And that suits me fine.
Yeah, when you're buying, what I tend to do is look out for a bundle. So the Nextbase one that I got for the car is it has a bundle which added a little widescreen lens to it. Get one that front and back on it as well. Yeah. You get a nice casing and you get a spare battery. So you can get bundles. Yeah. If you get bundles, it usually has everything that you need, including the SD card.
Yeah, but I got back out to Paul and we had discussed all these before. But again, if you have opinions, guys, if you're using a model that we've never heard of, we'll give you the contact details and we'd love your opinions. We've covered it before, but on the windscreen covers, internal or external, what do you think?
Peter got in touch with us, Aaron, on Instagram asking about electric hobs and SQIs.
Yes, it's a funny thing. Again, I was saying that we were busy on Instagram. A chap called out to my storage unit a couple of weeks ago, Martin, who has just finished a conversion, and his SQI didn't pass it because he had no cooker. He didn't want a cooker. He had done a Fiat Ducato, low roof, just kind of, he's into his fishing, and he just wants the option to stay over if he wants to stay over, and he had a little gas cooker because he'd cook outside, and the SQI failed it. Now, I got on to my SQI, which is Killian, who is affiliated with the Motor Home, the Motor Caravan Club of Ireland. And the question was, Aaron, could you please ask your SQI, will I be able to self-build a camper with an electric hob instead of having to build in gas rings like is standard now? Can I build a camper with an electric hob and get a pass certification? I got on to Killian and Killian wrote back and he says, you can currently use an electric hob designed for leisure use. Requirements for revenue insist on cooking facilities. One of the photos required when you're getting all the revenue paperwork done is a cooking appliance. The conversion must have the same functionality, i.e. being able to cook, as a factory-built motorhome. He went on to send me a link of a Tetford. They do a motorhome electric hob. And he sent me the link. It's on a Leisure Depot Direct. Is it leisureshopdirect.com? Just look for electric hob. Now, he also said something which I found unusual. He said, as long as it's covered for indoor use. And I went, it's feckin' electric. Of course it's going to be indoor. And he went, no, they do one that's suitable for outside undercover. But this one that they will only pass if it's certified for indoor use. And that's the model he sent me. That's on leisureshopdirect.com. Just search for Tetford Motorhome Electric Hob. And yes, you can get past.
Yeah, if you looked, Vango have a lovely little induction hob.
They do, he said.
But it clearly says on the packaging, for outdoor use only.
Right,
so yeah,
no good.
It might have something to do with the power, I'm not sure. But yeah, if you are going to put it in, I would imagine the SQA is going to check to make sure that it's rated for indoor use.
Now, if you go on to revenue.ie, you'll get all the stats that you need. If you just Google in there, search for conversions, and you'll get all the stats that you need. I think it's actually on that conversions.aspx page. But not all SQIs will pass low roofs. Not all SQIs will pass electric hobs, but I know the Motor Caravan Club of Ireland, if you use their two SQIs and everything else is the standard and it's wired properly, yes, you can use an electric hob. Again, I forwarded all the details on Instagram to Peter to give him the answer to that question.
Yeah, I suspect also it needs to be kind of fitted as opposed to
fitted
to loose as well. So just check with your SQI before undergoing is the best. Before undergoing a build, speak to an SQI that you're going to get to do it and get his checklist from him to make sure that when you go back to the SQI,
yes,
that you've completed everything
you said. Now, those hobs aren't cheap. That Tetford one in the UK is £842. They're not cheap, but if that's what you want, you get what you pay for.
Right. So, Charlie and me, Aaron, what's the latest there?
It's a bank holiday weekend and we're going to Doolin. I cannot wait. Okay. Bank holiday weekend this weekend and we're heading down to Doolin. It's been info videos because we haven't been camping and I've been working on the T3. A couple of weeks ago, I did a 12-volt by request. I did a 12-volt video of the 12-volt system. And people have asked me now to, could I elaborate a little bit more on that, which I will. Last week, I did the 220-volt power system that's in a motorhome. And again, just in our motorhome. Then, of course, I did the HR2 e-bike that we've just picked up from Cruise. And this morning's video was the smart helmet that I'm using. Again, youtube.com/ Charlie Lemire camping vlog. And you'll see the e-bike, the helmet, 220 and 12-volt system. We're out this weekend, but we're not recording. But we're out then from the following weekend. We'll start doing campsite reviews again. The VW T3 went through its DOE today, and I got a 2-year cert at last. She failed during the week last week on 3 little things. Anyway, got it all sorted this morning. She is now certified with a DOE roadworthiness cert for 2 years till 2026 because she's almost vintage. You get a 2-year cert. So.
So watch out for a smurf on the roads of Ireland during the summer.
As I say, this weekend, St. Paddy's weekend, we're heading to Doolin. I'm hoping the middle of next week to be heading off with Charlie in the VW. You can't miss us. We've got the VW, we've got the Charlie and me livery on the back of it. So, but I'm delighted. I have to be honest, there was a sigh of relief. I can't wait. I can't wait to get camping in. So that's what's happening. We're back recording videos the weekend after next. And Shiloh, we'll bring them to you as quick as we possibly can.
There, I suppose last week, the guys from Bear Hug Campers in the UK, Aaron, reached out to us there to tell us about a course that they've released, talking people through building their own conversions. They also do conversions themselves, but, you know, they kicked it off during lockdown and decided to release a course for it. So they, I reached out and said, would I like to do an interview? And I said, that's definitely something would be worth having a chat with people, having a chat with them about for the listeners. We had a great chat and I started off the interview asking John to introduce himself and tell us about Bear Hug Campers.
So I've been running Bear Hug Campers as a company for the last few years and it was born out of, as many things were, out of COVID. And I was working from home 5 days a week, 10 hours a day, sitting down. And I just got completely fed up of it. And I was getting squidgy and just needed to be doing something. I've got a background in a few different things from design and then a bit of woodwork, building motorbikes, a bit of metalwork, photography, events, just a completely random spray. And so I spent quite a long time trying to work out what I could do that incorporated all of those things. And it was some bits on the computer, working with other people, customers, and most importantly, building something with my hands and being creative. And camper vans, it was, and that kind of ticked all the boxes. And I already had a van. Well, ironically, I just sold a van, but we were kind of doing it up and everything. So I basically just cracked on with that whilst having a full-time job, cut my teeth doing the first one, pulled it all apart, redid it again, and was just learning. And then got my first commission in and got a little workshop and just kind of went from there. Yeah, that's kind of how it was born. And then I guess the first thing I noticed was that there were loads of people that were doing it themselves, just, you know, not for a business or anything like that, but just purely for themselves, for their families, as something to do, sometimes to save money, sometimes just because they wanted to the project to do themselves as a bit of a challenge. And then sometimes because they couldn't find what they wanted off the shelf. So they wanted, you know, like a particular specific idea they wanted to do or try or something like that. So multitude of different reasons. And so although we were doing full conversions for people as a service, so they would give us their van, and then we would do the whole fit out and then give it back to them as a fully polished turnkey thing. I was also helping out just informally loads of people self-building, just answering questions mainly, and just happy to share, you know, what it's like just chatting away about the thing you're really passionate about, just happy to chat away and share stuff and do some posts. And some of the posts on social media was just, you know, tips and things for people doing their own and stuff I'd learned along the way and mistakes I'd made and how to avoid them and stuff. And so I thought, I was trying to think of how to formalize that to help lots of people, widespread, I guess. So I spent probably 2 years from idea to release about doing some sort of online course. Also, as well, just in case anything else like COVID did happen again, there would be something online that people could do from home as well. Yeah, exactly. So I think probably the first year was just testing things out and getting ideas. And then the next year was doing all of the recording and writing for it.
So you started out, you came up, you had this idea and you had all these skills, which really married itself to converting a camper van. So you started off, people would give you a van, you'd convert a van for them on their spec, and you had done a few of those, and in the background were thinking about this idea to do a training course on how to convert. That is,
basically. So I mean, the idea came fairly early on, but I didn't feel like I was an expert enough in it to start teaching people. So you know, 5 or 6 vans later, and now I've got, you know, a couple of people that work for me as well, and the workshop's really productive, and we've, you know, do all sorts of different things and loads of smaller jobs in between. I feel like now, well, I kind of didn't realize, you know, when you become, inverted commas, I've got my air quotes here, an expert in something, you don't really feel like it, because you always know there's so much to learn.
Yeah.
But I was able just to talk for hours to people about it and basically talk them through how to do a van conversion start to finish. So I basically just thought, okay, maybe I'm ready now to put that down and into, you know, some sort of formal way of learning, in some sort of structure. And I did a few talks at some different events and things to help people out. So that's kind of how it started.
Okay. And like, so you put all this information together, I imagine it's like videos and instructions and all that. Like, so maybe give us an an idea of the structure of the course, and, you know, what are the modules in it maybe that people would be able to utilize?
Yeah, no problem. So one thing I didn't want to do was, because online courses became pretty popular, well, they kind of are now as well in general, ranging from anything, you know, from quick 20 quid courses and whatever to really long, expensive ones and masterminds and all these different things. So I didn't want to just do a sign up and forget about it type course. Also, converting a van is so, so complicated, and it's, as I quickly found out, it's really hard to actually get all of that down and all of the different options and things into videos. So it's a combination of traditional video course. You start here, you work your way through modules with videos, but basically to fill in all of the gaps that are kind of, not gaps, but anything else that people might have questions for whilst they're doing that. We also do weekly group video calls with me, so that whilst you're working on your van in the week, you'll come up with, you know, have questions. And the thing I found when I first started, that I just wish I had somebody that was an expert that I could just call up and say, how do you do this? I've stuck on this, rather than going into a YouTube rabbit hole or on some, you know, out of date Reddit forum about something really specific and trying to find an answer that you don't fully trust, just to have someone to say, is this right? And then someone to go, yes or no, try this or watch this video. So yeah, it's a combination of modules. I can just list a couple, like designing the systems, electric system, gas, water, the interior design, your ideal layout, parts and materials, workshop and tools, and then the building, getting it to the shell stage, installing the services, doing carpentry, all those kind of things. Wasn't particularly the order that it goes in, but that's just off the top of my head, some of the things there.
And like, I would imagine the variety of vans and cars and lorries and buses and everything out there are so different. And the systems that people can put in, so I don't know, maybe the heating system, it could be diesel or it could be gas or whatever. How do you cover off the options? Do you give people like a choice of systems to use, or do you kind of go with a standard kind of template that you know works?
Yeah, so the whole idea of this is to kind of show how we do it on all of our customer builds.
Yes.
So if you followed it along to the letter, the idea is, you get a van close to the kind of quality that we would produce, but we're kind of teaching the fundamentals and the framework of it and why you're doing something, as opposed to you just have to do this and put this here, so that you can, like you say, because it's so varied with vehicles and options and things, so that you can take that knowledge and make your own decisions of how to do something, if that makes sense. So it's kind of trying to teach the way that we would do it, but also the fundamentals, so it can be transferable to pretty much any van, even, you know, tiny home style building, and anything that you can buy, pick off the shelf, and how to install it. And if there is something missing, then that's what the group video calls with me is for, so that you can come and say, okay, we want to do this slightly weird thing, or this bit slightly different, we want to try this, how would you best go about that?
And is there a community there where the other people that are kind of learning or different stages kind of can chat to each other as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's like a closed group that kind of looks just like a simple version of like a Facebook group or something, so you can post pictures and post questions and things and talk to each other. And so the people that have been on there, so only launched in January, but the people that have been on there have already got quite, you know, it's like quite a close-knit group and know each other and have already talked about, you know, having a meetup in the summer and things. So it's quite nice to see that happening almost like without me doing that, and they can follow each other's progress and get a bit of accountability and I guess moral support throughout the build as well, because you know, if you're we're doing it full time in the week, but if you're just doing it at weekends or something like that, it does go on a bit longer. So it's good to have that there as well.
Like, what are some of the common mistakes people make when they go to conversion that, you know, by taking that structured approach that you've laid out will help them avoid?
I love that question. It's often things that you might not initially think about, or something that's not like a specific mistake that you've done this thing wrong in the build or how you've cut this or something. It's kind of more fundamental things. So the biggest one, the absolute biggest one that I see every single day, is not keeping it simple enough, or making something do too much, or however you want to phrase it. But basically, coming to a first build as a self-builder, even if they've got experience in DIY or a trade or something like that, and just wanting a camper van that does incredible things, or they might have seen a few different vans that they really like as inspiration and want to do a kind of combination of all of those things. First of all, I love the enthusiasm. That's awesome. You can't knock that at all. But trying to do too much in a build, in any build, especially your first build, will kind of lead to, at some point in the first sort of third or halfway through the build, some sort of major problems, usually of things kind of clashing or not kind of working. So we will always try and teach and recommend to keep it simple and put your kind of do lists of things. So your absolute, a couple of must haves and then some nice to haves, and base your whole design and layout around your absolute must haves. And then try and sprinkle a few nice to haves in there, so that you end up with something that's done really well and works and looks good and feels good and you want to be in, as opposed to something where everything's kind of jammed in and just about working. It just feels a bit over kind of cluttered or overcomplicated, and it's not quite gone the way you want it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where the planning would come in. I would imagine that if somebody's going to take on a conversion job, you know, it's probably a good time to do the wiring and the plumbing before you maybe put the cabinets in, or when you have them half in, and so you don't hit a problem kind of further down the line, have to take it all apart to fit something in as well. I'd imagine
that's common mistake number two you've just said there, which is the build order. So doing things in the wrong order, or not necessarily the wrong order, but a different order to what would be best for the particular things you're doing, is the way that you kind of get yourself into all sorts of trouble down the line, and having to redo work, and, you know, worse still, having to throw away work. So, you know, break something out, or you actually make a mistake that's irreparable by damaging a bit of equipment or something. So we've got kind of, you know, like infographics and things to show the best order to do things, and the way we've set all the videos out and all the modules, and we talk about the order quite a lot. And often there are things that are kind of, a video might be here in a bit of a random place, you're like, why is this here? We kind of try and talk about why it's there, because in X amount of time down the line, you're going to need that there behind the wall for this job or something like that. So yeah, that's definitely, and that comes with just having done it, you know, quite a few times.
A question just popped into my head there. So if I'm going to bring a van to you to convert, or if I'm going to buy a van for myself to convert myself, is there any advice you give someone on the type of van to base your camper on, or the year of the van, or what to look out for, or what to avoid if you're bringing a van to yourself, or taking on a project yourself?
Yeah, I mean, there are vans that I would say are kind of easier to start off building in, because the shape of them and the way they're laid out lends itself to a conversion. So if you're in the idea of going for something like a panel van size, the popular ones are things like Mercedes Sprinters, but they're, I would say, trickier to build into than something like a Peugeot Boxer, which is a bit squarer, and there are easier ways for the cables to run around the walls and stuff like that. So, and there's lots of space underneath. We talk about using space underneath for tanks and things. So I would say something like a Peugeot Boxer, or the other ones that are basically the same, which is a Fiat Ducato or Citroen Relay, medium wheelbase, is like a really great van to start in and to do a conversion.
Nice,
or if you want
detail,
something
probably.
Yeah, exactly. Or something smaller than everyone's favorite, the T6. So that's just a nice small van. It's quite square as well, which just makes things easier.
Oh, interesting. I know Aaron, who I did a podcast with, converted an ambulance a few years back, and he has all the videos up there. But I remember at the start of it, him giving out about having to take apart all the systems and everything and the lockers and all that was in that ambulance. And God, that turned out to be a big job, but he got through it. In fairness, he did a fantastic job. But yeah, you can see where a little bit of forethought into what you're going to build is important as well. So, like, I would imagine you need an area to do this, obviously somewhere indoors where you can, you're not dependent on the weather. And I'm just thinking you would probably have to go out and buy a whole bunch of tools probably that you need to do. Could you give us maybe some advice on what are the common or necessary tools to have before you take on something like this?
Yeah, so this is something we talk about as well, kind of at the beginning of the course. There are some things that might turn people off because they think, oh, I haven't got this, or I haven't got this set up, so I can't do that. But I would say all of these things, you can do it. It just makes your life easier if you have some things to help. So for example, if you have a garage that you can put a van in, most people don't. If you do, that will just, you know, that will make your life nice and easy because you can work on it all day, all night, rain or shine. But if you have a driveway, you can put up a little gazebo next to it. Or if you're going to put an awning on your van, if you do that first, then you pull out the awning and you've got a space to work under. So there's all different ways. And also if you're doing a panel van, where one that you can stand up in, until you start filling that out with structure, like furniture and kitchen and things, that is a workshop space as well. You can be in there, you can cut in there, paint in there. So yeah. I would say don't be put off if you know, don't feel like you have the ideal space to do it in, because there are ways around it, and kind of workarounds and things. And in terms of tools, we've got loads and loads of content on tools and different things and how to use them and essentials, nice to haves, and then extra useful little things. So the essentials is stuff that you can do multiple things with. So for example, let's take chopping wood. You could get a track saw, you could get a circular saw, a jigsaw, a handsaw, a chop saw, table saw, all these different things. But I would say if you're going to spend your money on one first, then get something that does multiple things. So for example, that's the jigsaw, which is a handheld tool. So that can cut metal, that can cut wood, that can cut around corners, and you can actually set up, create a really simple jig out of a piece of straight wood clamped next to the line that you're wanting to cut down, for example, on a piece of plywood. And then you could have got a track that you can cut against and cut a perfectly straight line. So yes, it might take 5 minutes longer to make that cut, but you're doing everything with one tool. So that's, you know, your way to save a bit of money on having to buy the next best thing.
Yeah, it'll help you from cutting too much out as well. What does Aaron say? He says measure twice and cut once as well, just to make sure
yeah.
it all goes well. Yeah, we've covered the tools in the workplace. Like, Are you able to give us kind of an idea of, say, the cost of, say, the workshop? I know you put a lot of time into this. Obviously, you want to make sure that the course is valued. Like, how much would somebody expect to pay for a course like this? Are there different options, or is it just an open course?
So there's one main option with an extra premium option on top. So the main option is where you get all the content and you get lifetime access to that content. Then you get access to the weekly group video calls with me and also the community. And so it's 12 months access to the support, so essentially me. And that's a one-off payment of $975, or you can split that over 3 months. And then the premium is basically exactly the same, but you get some additional one-on-one training video calls with me if you want that extra support. So it's $975 as a one-off payment for the main thing to basically get you in there and get you going. And the way we look at that, because obviously you're going to be buying lots of bits and bobs for your van and spending money, we will try and help you save money throughout your build. So you're going to be saving money on buying the right parts, buying the right materials, not buying too much, not buying the wrong things, because we're going to help you with that. And also just saving money throughout the build by reducing the amount of mistakes you make. We're having to redo stuff, buy extra things like that. So when you look at it like that, it's, you know, a kind of investment that hopefully will work itself out.
Yeah, I think investment is the right word there. Like, certainly having, if you're handy enough, but you don't have somebody to go to for advice, I think it's definitely a great resource to have. And just to state that the pricing there is pounds, not euros, because I know some of our Irish listeners will be in euros, but I think it's still invaluable to have that resource to go to. Well, look, thank you so much for jumping on the call. I think it's definitely something that a lot of people would be interested in. You know, I can see it going from strength to strength for yourself. And you said the videos are there all throughout somebody doing the build. And I think that backup support is phenomenal as well, to have that, you know.
Cool. Thank you for having me. Good to speak to you.
Can you, just to close it out, could you tell people where to find out about the course, where to go, say, on webpage and social media?
Yeah, so if you just go to bearhugcampers.co.uk, you should be pretty clear where to go from there. And also on Instagram, we are just bearhugcampers.
Brilliant, yeah. So check that out, guys. And thanks, John, for jumping on the call. And we wish you the best of luck with the training course.
Thanks very much. Speak soon.
You mentioned during that interview, it's like when I was doing the B-Ball, I literally had YouTube, and you see it on Facebook, people say, where can I find information about this? And I literally had YouTube to go to. Something like that would have been brilliant. Yeah. I know I had access to a website that was all text, but something like that course that has video, and the fact that you can do one-to-one with somebody who knows the scene, would have been brilliant when I was doing the B-Ball.
Yeah, and a lot of us have people that we can go to ask questions for different areas, but not everybody would have that as well, you know. So it is, I like the community aspect of it as well, where you can check in, you know, on a weekly or more basis and chat with other people who are doing as well and help each other out, you know. So look, it was really enjoyed chatting with them. I think it's a novel idea that they're doing, and wish them the very best with it.
Yeah, very good. Well done. Good interview. And I joined him on Instagram and he sent me a text to say, was just talking to Chris, did he send you the interview? And I said, it's going out this Wednesday. So it's great. If you have somebody like that, that's in the game, be it making camping stuff, doing conversions, repairing campers, and you think there's an interview there, we'll give you the contact details. Please do get in touch. We'd love more interviews like that throughout the season, this season of the podcast.
Yeah. One thing I've seen more and more, Aaron, is companies kind of, that used to do a lot of the damp repairs are kind of getting out of it now as well. So certainly that's probably an area that's, there's less and less people doing it now. Yeah. So if any listeners are involved in doing those damp repairs and want to
get a free plug,
want us to give them a shout out, certainly would, because certainly those guys are real heroes. I know it's a lot of work in what they do, and it's expensive, but you know, if you want to protect your pride and joy. You really need their services, and you're usually, when you go to them, you're fairly stuck as well, you know.
Yeah, they usually are a last resort, but you're right. And if you're in the game of doing habitation checks, get in touch with us, give us your details. We'll gladly let people know. We get questions weekly about, hey, Aaron, where can I get a habitation check done? So please do. Yeah. If that's your game or you know somebody, contact details coming up in a second. Right, we'll finish up with Camp Life. T. Phillips was on to you during the week.
Yeah, so he said a message. He says, hello, camping crew. My friend and I live in England, specifically in Yorkshire. We plan to tour Ireland, including the Wild Atlantic Way and down the west coast of Ireland in his Volkswagen Transporter camper van in June. He said, can you tell us what events are taking place, or ask your listeners what events are taking place around June in Ireland? So, for example, we might enjoy a festival of Irish folk or world music, or even a walking festival. So I did a couple of a bit of a search there just prior to the podcast. And some of the festivals I came there was the Forbidden Fruit Festival in Dublin is between June the 1st and the 3rd.
You've got the Cat Laughs Comedy Festival, Kilkenny, which has been running for some years now. Again, that's June 2nd to 4th.
And it's the June Bank Holiday weekend. There's Bloomsday in Dublin, which is a very popular one, June the 11th to the 16th.
If you're into reading, I know you mentioned music and walking, but the Docky Book Festival is on from June the 13th to the 16th.
And the Sea Sessions in Donegal are between June the 21st and 23rd. But if anybody knows of any walking festivals or world music festivals or Irish folk festivals that are taking place in June as well, you might let us know and we'll share them with T. Phillips.
And enjoy your stay when you're making your way down the Wild Atlantic Way. You will absolutely love it. Right, that is it. Episode 194 of the Camping Crew podcast. Again, thank you all for your input. If you have anything, any suggestions, ideas, reviews of campsites or camping products or any news items you want us to discuss on the podcast, please do get in touch. But to do that, you need all of our contact details, and Chris has them.
Yes, so our email address is campingcrewpodcast@gmail.com. Our webpage is thecampingcrew.ie. On Twitter, we're at The Camping Crew. On Threads, we're at The Camping Crew Podcast. Instagram, we're The Camping Crew Podcast. On Facebook, you'll find us posting regular enough on all the good motorhomes and camping groups. And if you'd like, you might record an audio message on your smartphone and email it to us.
And don't forget, we have our sister website, campsitereview.com. There's a forum there. It's been quite active over the last couple of weeks. It's free and always will be. That's campsitereview.com. And then on Fridays, we'll get back into the camping and youtube.com/Charlie and Me, our camping vlog. And you can look back on all of the videos and info videos and video reviews that are up there. Thank you very, very much. Look, it's official. St. Patrick's Day is the official start. Campsites are open all over the country. If you see myself or Chris out and about on a campsite during the summer season, please do call over, say hi. As I said, this weekend I'm going to Doolin and I'm going to have that e-bike with me. If you want to take a look at that, if you want stickers, anything like that at all, please do call over and say hi. From me, Aaron, thanks for joining us on episode 194. Talk to you soon.
And if you are up around Doolin, take it easy going around the bends, because Aaron could end up on the other side of the road when he's taking some corners on his electric bike. So do look out for him. I wouldn't say he's the most steadiest on a bicycle, so mind out for that. Anyway, it's a goodbye for me. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, share on social media, and tell your camper friends all about us.
Well, that's it for another podcast from the Camping Crew. Thanks for listening, and do join us again very soon. Safe camping.